come to order. The members, please register their presence by voting. Has any member failed to register their presence? Clerk may take the quorum.
Mr. Speaker, there are 30 present and 10 absent.
Mr. Miller?
Mr. Speaker, no one's excused from the call of the House today. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the absent members be shown as excused on official state business.
There be no objection. Hackney is permanently adjourned. Lock him in for the day. Members, please rise for prayer. Reverend Robert McNabb, United Methodist Church.
God, our Father, even at this moment as we come blundering in your presence in prayer, we are haunted by the memories of duties unperformed, promptings disobeyed, and needs ignored. Opportunities to be kind and thoughtful have knocked at the doors of our hearts and have been turned away. Draw near, we pray, to us and overcome our selfishness, that our wills may be brought into union with yours. In the Spirit of our Lord.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the prayer be spread on the journal.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
May we be at ease?
House be at ease. House come to order. The clerk certified the correctness of the previous day's journal.
Mr. Speaker, as acting chief clerk, I hereby certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 123rd day, May 13th, 1976.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent this body approve the journal as certified by the acting chief clerk for the 123rd day.
No objection. So ordered. This brings us to introduction of guests. Are the guests to be introduced to the House, Mr. Elias?
Mr. Speaker, we have in Gallery B a number of my constituents from Sitka. They're known as the Ah Jaheen dancers, the old Sitka dancers, and they're a group of youngsters who have been traveling throughout the state for the last 2 years from Fairbanks to Nia Bay, Washington, and they just returned from Haines, where they had a performance, I believe it was last night, and incidentally, they'll be performing this evening at the museum at 7 o'clock, and I'd urge those of you who have the opportunity to go down and watch. They really put on a good show, and the youngest one is age 6, and I don't know how the oldest one is, but I'd like to introduce them. Liz Maiacedo, Lillian Nielsen, Esther Pruitt, Marlene Thomas, Larry Titel, and Mike Titel, Cynthia Williams, Ethel Williams, Janice Williams, Juliana Williams, Debbie Wolf, and Dodie Wolf. And they're accompanied by their adult supervisors as Ethel McKinnon, Betty Louth, Mabel Diedrichson, and Elizabeth Basco.
Mr. Swanson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A this morning, we have two visitors from Fort Yukon. Bill Moore, who is the assistant city manager, and Jonathan Solomon, who has long been associated with Center Education for Alaska.
Mrs. Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, we have three very special guests from Anchorage today. They're students at the Stellar Secondary School, and they have come here by a kayak from Haines. Their names are Kim Post and Rick Hatton and Janice Troyer.
Other guests for introduction. Does the clerk have messages from the governor?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. This is dated May 14, 1976. Dear Mr. Speaker, for three reasons I have vetoed a pre-conference committee substitute for Senate committee substitute for House Bill number 686, an act relating to games of chance and skill. And Mr. Speaker, this is a long letter which has been distributed to members of the House.
The letter has been placed on the individual members to ask?
May 13th. Oh,
excuse me, Mr. Naughton.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Is anything being done on the question of the governor sending us a letter 2 days after the period in which he can veto a bill?
Mr. Naughton, I was having Mr. Barrier double-check the count of days, and it's still very likely that the message is an illegal message. And apparently, there's a very binding West Virginia Supreme Court case on the matter, but that may take some time to resolve. Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I can remember two or three years ago, we let the then governor upstairs, took him two or three days late coming down with some appointments.
Mr. Urien, that process has gone on also continually through this session, and without the appropriate resolution extending the deadlines for appointments also. But this we have no control over because it is a constitutional question, just like our advancement of bills and other things that we're always concerned about inadvertently violating. Mr. Elias. Clerk, have other messages from the governor?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. May 13th, 1976. Dear Mr. Speaker, I've read the following resolutions and I'm transmitting the enrolled and engrossed copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. House Concurrent Resolution Number 122, House Concurrent Resolution Number 140, House Concurrent Resolution Number 145, Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 81, Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 94, Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 107, Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 43, Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 45. Sincerely, J.S. Hammond, Governor. May 13th, 1976. Dear Mr. Speaker, I have signed the following bills and I'm transmitting the enrolled and engrossed copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 484, Abandoned Vehicles, Chapter 61, SLA 1976. Senate Bill Number 360, Chapter 62, SLA 1976. Senate Bill Number 209, amended by the House, Chapter 63, SLA 1976. Sincerely, J.S. Hammond, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to bring up reconsideration of Senate Bill 720 at this time.
Brings the bill automatically before the House. Clerk, place the bill on the board. Mr. Freeman.
Could we have it at ease, please?
House, be at ease.
House, come to order.
Would the clerk read committee substitute for 720, Mr. Rode? You're going to call the House and the vote on the bill. Assumes apparently we're going to have prolonged debate. Would the clerk read the bill in third reading?
In the Senate by the Judiciary Committee, House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 720, amended by the House, entitled An Act Relating to the Reacquisition of Oil and Gas Leasehold Interests in Kachemak Bay and Providing for an Effective Date.
The bill is before you for discussion, Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent to return to second reading for purposes of a specific amendment.
Objections noted, Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, the amendment has been placed on everybody's desk, and I apologize for not having my name on it. It does say amendment to House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 720, page 2, line 21. Do we need to have the clerk read the specific
amendment? Would the clerk read the specific amendment?
This is amendment number 4 by Gardner on page 2, line 21, before the period insert. And the commissioner shall suspend drilling activities to explore or develop any existing state oil and gas leases in the bay.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, speaking to the motion to go back to second reading for the purpose of this specific amendment, this amendment is necessary as felt by both our Council of the Legislative Affairs Agency and the Attorney General's Office concurs in this. This goes to the question of the moratorium. They feel that the way the bill is drafted now in that subsection E on the moratorium, there could be some legal problems because of the fact of this question of the difference between having authority and invoking the authority. And there's some question as to that, and this would make it clear that we're directing them in specifically to suspend the drilling activities. This is directing the commissioner. There's no question that they have the power, but somehow or another, there could be a legal question raised as to whether they're actually authorized to exercise the power, and this would make it clear that they are.
Mrs. Fisher.
Mr. Speaker, I don't have the bill before me, so does it pertain just to those leases which were on the lease sale, or does it pertain to other development that is now existing in the Kachemak Bay area?
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I think for partial answer to that is the proposed leases that we're talking about in this bill are the only leases in the bay. And this phrase would be added to the existing language that says no drilling activities to explore, develop, let's see. It reads, no drilling activities to explore or develop any existing state or oil and gas leases in the bay are permitted. And then you would just add this to go on and say, and the commissioner shall suspend drilling activities to explore or develop any existing state oil and gas leases in the bay.
Well, thank Mr. Gardner. I thank you, Mr. Gardner. I have a copy of the bill now. But I'm wondering, yesterday I didn't speak on the bill at all. It seemed to me everybody else wanted to speak, and I sat here. It was all repetitious anyway. But it did come up on the floor yesterday in some of the speeches that were made that to find the actual cost, I mean, what the worth of these leases were, you would have to know the amount of oil within the lease, as I understood it. I mean, that they were going to be able to get out of that lease, find out the amount that the lease was actually worth. That's the impression I got from some of the speeches on the floor yesterday. Well, if they're going to find out how much oil is really there or what the lease is worth, won't they have to do some type of drilling or exploration to find out the worth of these leases? And this would prohibit that.
Mr. Gardner.
Mrs. Freeman, Mrs. Fisher, I think point gets to the whole point of the bill is that's the whole point of the bill is for at this time to suspend the drilling activity in there. And if we were to continue drilling for oil to find out how much oil is there so we'll know how much to compensate them, there wouldn't be any purpose to the whole bill. That's the whole purpose of the bill.
Is there any other discussion? Mr. Huntington.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I objected to that. First, I would like to know from the chairman of the committee how long does this shall suspend drilling activities to explore? How long a time is that in effect? 1 year. While I'm on my feet, something came to me last night, and I woke up and I said, there must be something wrong with that 720. And I got to thinking about the discredit of the Indian people all over the nation, and all accused by the white man, the native, an Indian, is known as an Indian giver. And I don't think the Indians are giving in this case here. I think it's the white man who's turned to be the Indian giver himself. We gave in good faith. We lost our honor by accepting this bill yesterday. We became an Indian giver. What you accuse the Indians of doing yourself many, many times throughout your life. and you become that person yourself. Not only that, I see in this crowd here people who are against the Hammond administration, and you're falling right into Hammond's hands. He promised on his campaign table that he would take the leeches out of Kachemak Bay, and you're doing it for him. That's the best part of it.
Mr. Huntington, we should confine our debate to the issues
you,
that
Mr.
are inherent
Speaker.
In the bill. Not over what somebody's campaign promises are. Mr. Urien, House of Beauties. Come to order. Under debate is a motion to return to second reading for a specific amendment, the amendment being Mr. Gardner's amendment number 4. Mr. Gardner?
Mr. Speaker, I'll try to explain this a little bit clearer if I can. The problem with the bill now is legally is that it says no drilling activities to explore or develop any existing state oil geysers in the bay are permitted. Well, that seems kind of clear when you read it. There was never any question brought up, but our legal beagles say that there is some question, because that doesn't necessarily mean that they can invoke, that they can suspend the contracts, which are the leases. And so to clear up that legal question, they recommend adding this language that says the commissioner shall suspend drilling activities. And because it appears in the lease in section 26 of the leases, but there's a question as to whether they have the authority to invoke that. And this would just resolve that question. I don't think this doesn't do anything more or less than what we thought the bill did when we drafted it. Just clears up a legal question as to whether it really does what we thought it did.
Any discussion? Mr. Rode. Clerk, staff bar the door, and will the sergeant at arms secure the absent members. House will, Mr. Brown.
May we be at ease?
House will be at ease. The question is, should the House return to second reading for purposes of specific amendment? Members may proceed. Mrs. Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, because a member of my immediate family has represented an oil company that's involved in challenging, in defending the leases in Kachemak Bay, and because that appears it might be a conflict of interest for me, I'm going to move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to abstain from voting on this bill.
Objections noted. Under the rules, any one objection obviates a member's right to abstain. If objection is maintained, then a member may not abstain, and the measure is also not debatable. So the chair would rule at this time that Mrs. Rudd has acknowledged a conflict of interest, but the body apparently will require her to vote. The question is, shall the House return a second reading for purposes of specific amendment? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may close the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Mr. Speaker, there are 27 yeas and 13 nays.
The House has failed to return or has returned a second reading for specific amendment. Mr. Gardner, would you move the amendment?
Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent for amendment number 4.
Objection is noted. So any discussion? Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I think that sufficient work has been put into the present bill. I think the Judiciary Committee and whoever else reviewed the bill did an excellent job in making absolutely sure that there would be no exploration or development. Further clarification of the issue is just totally unnecessary, waste of time. Ask the body to vote against the amendment. The language is already clear.
Question is, shall Amendment Number 1 be adopted? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Amendment Number 1 is adopted. Mr. Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that substitute for Senate Bill 720 amended be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Objections noted. Mr. Urey.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to move and ask unanimous consent that we rescind our action in adopting the amendment and ask for roll call vote.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, that motion is actually out of order because we have a motion pending. However, with the permission of the body, I will withdraw my motion to advance.
Motion to withdraw is advanced. The question is, should the House rescind its action on failing to adopt Amendment Number 4? The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may close the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Mrs. Sullivan. Any other member? Mr. Osterbeck. Any other member? Clerk may take the roll.
Mr. Speaker, there no one is excused.
The House has failed to rescind its action, and Amendment Number 4 stands as adopted. Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'll renew my motion to that substitute for Senate Bill Number 720 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
The question is, should House concurrent, should committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 720 as amended be advanced for second, third reading, placed on final passage? The members, is there any objection? Then the bill is advanced. The clerk will read the bill for the third and final time.
In the Senate, by the Judiciary Committee, House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 720, amended by the House, entitled An Act Relating to the Reacquisition of Oil and Gas Leasehold Interests in Kachemak Bay and Providing for an Effective Date.
Bills before you for discussion and debate. Mr. Anderson.
You know, it's quite possible that we may have overlooked another legal angle here where the existing holders of the oil and gas leases in Kachemak Bay may be able to slip through, and it seems to me maybe we ought to hold over the final vote on this until tomorrow to make absolutely sure that there is no escape clause in the bill. And, you know, since this has had due consideration in the Resources Committee, Judiciary Committee, Finance Committee, and on the Senate side as well, that there just may be a possibility, since we this morning came up with additional language that clarifies the intent of the legislature, that we ought to give it more due deliberation, just in case we may have missed a nail to finally hammer this one home, so that there's no question about the intent of the legislature in reneging on its original commitment in Kachemak Bay.
Is there any further discussion? Question is, should committee substitute for Senate Bill 720 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may close the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Mr. Speaker, there are 26 yeas and 14 nays.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, I'll move adoption of the effective date clause.
Question is, should the effective date clause be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may close the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Mr. Speaker, there are 36 yeas, 4 and 4 nays.
The effective date clause is adopted, and House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 720 has passed the House. Mr. Gardner, House will be at ease. The House come to order. Does the clerk have messages from the other House?
May 13th, 1976, Mr. Speaker, the Senate accepts the invitation of the House to meet in joint session for the purpose of considering the Governor's veto of free conference for committee substitute for Senate committee substitute for House Bill Number 686, Games of Chance and Skill, at 11 a.m. today. May 13, 1976, the Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill Number 522, Judiciary Amended, Regulation of Lobbying, with the following amendments. Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill Number 522, amended by the Senate, same title, and transmitting same for consideration. May 13, 1976, the Senate has failed to concur in the House amendment to committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 644, Color of License Plates, namely House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 644, amended by the House, License Plates, effective date failed, and respectfully requests the House to recede from its amendment. In the event that the House does not recede, the President has appointed the following members to a conference with powers of free conference to meet with a like committee from the House on the above bills: Senator Hubert, Chairman, Senator Rohde, and Senator Tillian. On May 13, 1976, the Senate has failed to recede from its amendment to House Bill 648, amended, Payment of Wages in the State, namely Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 648, amended by the Senate. The President has appointed the following members to a conference committee with powers of free conference to meet with the like committee from the House to consider the above bills: Senator Willis, Chairman, Senator Meehan, Senator Miller. May 13, 1976, the President has appointed the following members to a conference committee with powers of free conference to meet with the like committee from the House on committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 579, Former Elected State Officials and Public Employees Retirement System, effective date, and House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 579, Elected State Officials and Retirement Systems, effective date, Senator Ray, Chairman, Senator Ferguson, and Senator Miller. May 13, 1976, the Senate has passed Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 694, relating to the Criminal Law Revision Commission, effective date, with the following amendment: Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 694, Finance, creating a Code Revision Commission, effective date, and transmitting same for consideration. May 13, 1976, the Senate has passed Committee Substitute for House Bill 663, relating to Alaska National Guard and Alaska Naval Militia Educational Assistance, with the following amendment: Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 663, relating to the Alaska National Guard and Alaska Naval Militia, effective date, and transmitting same for consideration. May 13, 1976, the Senate has passed Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 154, relating to criminal assault, with the following amendment: Page 1, lines 13 through 14, delete, intimidate, and. Mr. Speaker, I believe this has been. Oh, I beg your pardon. On page 1, lines 13 and 14, delete, intimidate, and. Page 1, lines 27, 28, delete, under circumstances or conditions likely to produce, insert, and causes. Page 1, lines 22 through 24, delete new material and reinsert deleted material. Page 2, lines 8 through 14, delete section 11.15.228 in its entirety. Page 2, line 20, delete 1 year and reinsert 6 months. And so committee substitute for House Bill Number 154, amended by the Senate, same title, is transmitted herewith for consideration. The Senate has passed the following and transmitting same for consideration: Senate Joint Resolution 55, amended, entitled Proposing Amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to measures submitted by the legislature to the voters.
Judiciary.
In the Senate by the Commerce Committee, committee substitute for Senate Bill 688, entitled An Act Relating to Salmon Hatcheries and Providing for an Effective Date.
Resources and Finance.
In the Senate by the Finance Committee, committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 689, Finance, entitled An Act Relating to a Fisheries Enhancement Loan Program and Providing for an Effective Date.
Resources and Finance.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
So Clerk, do you have general communications?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. May 13, 1976. Dear Mr. Speaker, the House Commerce Committee held a hearing on the Alaska Public Utilities Commission appointees on April 2, 1976. It is the recommendation of the committee that the appointments be confirmed by the Alaska State Legislature. Sincerely, Representative Bob Bradley, Chairman, House Commerce Committee. I have no further communications, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, have reports of standing committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. May 14, 1976. The Conference Committee with Powers of Free Conference, which has had committee substitute for House Bill 198, Finance, Credit for Military Service and Computing Retirement Benefits for State Employment, Effective Date, and committee substitute for House Bill 198, Finance, amended by the Senate, Public Employees Retirement System, Effective Date, recommends that Free Conference Committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill Number 198, entitled An Act Relating to the Public Employees Retirement System and Providing for an Effective Date, be adopted. The report was signed by Senate members Senator Miller, Chairman, Senator Willis, and Senator Tillian, signed by House members Representative Miller, Chairman, Representative Wallace, and Representative Eliason. I have no further reports of special committees, Mr.
Clerk,
Speaker.
Clerk, we have introduction of resolutions.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of House bills.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Brings us to the daily calendar. Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'll move for a 10-minute recess.
The House, without objection, will be in recess for 10 minutes. The joint session will come to order. Under provision of our uniform joint rules, the President of the Senate presides over our joint sessions. My privilege at this time to turn the gavel over to Senator Croft. Would the staff close the doors?
Senator Bradley?
Here.
Senator Butkovich?
Here.
Senator Chance?
Here.
Senator Coletta?
Here.
Senator Croft?
Here.
Senator Ferguson?
Here.
Senator Homan?
Here.
Senator Huber?
Here.
Senator Curtula?
Here.
Senator Meehan? Senator Miller?
Here.
Senator Orsini?
Here.
Senator Poland?
Here.
Senator Rader?
Here.
Senator Ray? Senator Rohde?
Here.
Senator Sackett?
Here.
Senator Tillian?
Here.
Senator Willis?
Here.
Senator Ziegler?
Here.
There are 20 members present.
Members of the House may proceed to indicate your presence by voting. Member Rosine voted. Secretary will lock the roll.
President, roll call indicates that all members are present.
Senator Curtula.
President, first item for us at this joint session is the governor's veto of House Bill Number 686. Mr. President, I move that Senate Committee substitute House Bill 686 become law, notwithstanding the governor's veto.
Senator Curtula moves that House Bill 686 become law, notwithstanding the governor's veto. Representative Elias.
Mr. President, I'd like to mention a few things. This particular bill, which left this house in the form of a rain cloud, came back as a thunderstorm. And what particularly offensive to me is the fact that we're opening this to political parties. I think that 3 years ago when we allowed tax credits for donations to political campaigns, would certainly be ample for their needs that we have in that particular field. But since I've been over here, we've had many problems in the local level, the A&B, the Moose, the Elks, and the American Legion. It seems that the regulations that have been forthcoming from the Department of Revenue has practically annihilated their local programs where they raise money for purposes such as oratorical contests and Boy State and baseball and these other types of things. Mr. Speaker, it seems like there's no way to compromise. It seems that we either have to override the governor's veto to relieve some of these problems that happen at the local level or sustain his veto and probably keep the political parties out there, which I would certainly endorse. But I think that two evils, Mr. Speaker. I think that we should allow these people who are working on a local level who are raising funds for welfare primarily for youth programs should be allowed to continue. And under the present regulations, they're completely hamstrung. So I think in view of the fact that it seems like this is the only alternative, that I'm going to vote to override.
Further discussion. Senator Ryder.
Mr. President, the first veto of the state government was by Governor Egan of this bill in 1959, as I recall, or 60. I forgot which year it was. The first time a veto was overridden was on this bill. This bill became law despite his veto. The reason that he vetoed the bill was because he felt it was uncontrollable, the definitions. And that's proven to be the case. It took longer than I thought that it would take for it to be shown. It's taken since 1958 or 59 to the present time. I thought it would show itself up in 5 or 6 years. But the fact of the matter is they can't control it. So what we're going to do now is to take an uncontrollable situation and take the top off of it so we don't have any problem controlling it anymore. There's no question about this, that this bill will permit gambling in this state for purposes other than welfare and charity and religious and educational purposes. It will permit gambling for purposes of benefiting the people in the organization who conduct the gambling, the public gambling. They can use it for their personal benefit. That's what the bill says. They can take the proceeds, not for welfare, not for educational, not for charitable, but for their personal benefit. And that's a far, far cry from where we started. The governor's veto should not be overridden.
Representative Brown.
Mr. President, I differ with the previous speaker. It has bothered me several times that probably just because of the need to abbreviate press reports and in preparing headlines and lead lines and stories that the word gambling always keeps getting mentioned. It's been mentioned so much that I'm sure that the average person sitting listening casually to a radio newscast has some idea that conjuring up some organization with whom they disagree maintaining a roulette wheel or a faro game or something like that. This bill addresses only things of the sort as particularly raffles and bingo games. I don't think that there's anything uncontrollable about it. I think that if we were to have a provision here that would provide for any kind of legalized casino gambling or many other things, and I spoke against the parimutuel betting bill on this floor in the House last year, I think that if we did that sort of thing, that would be a terrible mistake because we would create an attractive market for people who are in interstate commerce in those particular businesses when they are businesses. But that's not what this bill is about. This bill is to allow what I believe are public interested organizations to help to fund themselves, and particularly with respect to the political parties to continue a practice that has been carried on really for 15 or 20 years under the presumption that it was legal until determinations by the, or letters from the Department of Revenue in October of this year, for both of the major political parties, as a matter of fact. I think we should vote to override the governor's veto, and I just have a parliamentary inquiry or a question is that the original motion did not mention the free conference committee substitute. I assume that that is the nature of the motion.
Senator Orsini.
Mr. President, I certainly like to associate myself with Senator Rader's remarks. I think everything you said is very true. Representative Eliason says we have no other choice with respect to either overriding or sustaining the veto. I think we do have a choice, and that's to sustain the veto, and if and in the closing days, hopefully, of the session, pass a law that will perhaps take care of the problem. Mr. President, there's another larger problem that I see in allowing this veto to be overridden. Senator Gravel, earlier this session, sent all of us a message concerning the concern of Congress with Alaska's privileges and the ability of Alaska to govern its own destiny. According to his statements to us, there, Congress was looking very strongly at perhaps revoking some of our privileges. Los Angeles Times got nationwide coverage about the crime and other types of activities here in Alaska that were not looked on with favor nationally. We are very sensitive at this time to national congressional action on our D2 lands, on gas pipelines, and many other issues. My fear is that by further expanding the gambling operations of the state to basically anybody who wants to, that this will further make more difficult our congressional delegation's job to keep the benefits that Alaska has and try and get a gas pipeline.
Yeah. Mr. President, I think that Senator Rader made an excellent point. He pointed out to us that Bill Eden vetoed this bill back in 1959 or 1960, and he said that there was no control. Now, we are going to have control, and if we had enacted a piece of legislation back in 1961 or 62 or somewhere, we wouldn't be in the problem we're in today. I think the piece of legislation is a piece of legislation to control. Okay, I'm going to go to override.
Mr. President, the difficulty is that it's a catch-22 situation. On page 2, we say that only a qualified organization in defining is one which operates without profits to its members. Now, that seems reasonable. But on page 1, with the new language, we say, no, it's okay if you want to promote the welfare or well-being of the members. Is that profit to its members, to promote the well-being of its members? We're adding nonsense language to it. We're adding contradictory language. We're not repealing the nonprofit situation. It's still in the bill. But now an organization has to be nonprofit, but they can use the money for the benefit of their members. We're patching up something impossibly. It doesn't solve problems. It creates problems. And we're saying it's a nonprofit organization, but you can use the money for your own benefit. Is that a nonprofit organization? A nonprofit organization is one where you do not use it for your own benefit. It's for the benefit of other people. It's not for the benefit of the people in the organization. But this says it can be used for the benefit of the people in the organization. That's why it's wrong.
Senator Bradley?
No.
Senator Butkovich?
Yes.
Senator Chance?
Yes.
Senator Coletta?
No.
Senator Croft?
Yes.
Senator Ferguson?
Yes.
Senator Holman?
Yes.
Senator Huber?
Yes.
Senator Petula?
No.
Senator Meehlin?
Yes.
Senator Miller?
Yes.
Senator Orsini?
No.
Senator Poland? Senator Rader?
No.
Senator Ray?
Yes.
Senator Rohde?
Yes.
Senator Sackett?
No.
Senator Tillian?
Yes.
Senator Willis?
No.
Senator Ziegler?
Yes.
12 yeas, 8 nays.
President, there are 30 yeas and 10 nays.
There are 30 total, 40 yeas and 20 nays. 42 yeas and 18 nays.
Mr. President, the 37 yeas and 3 nays.
Senator Bradley?
Yes.
Senator Butkovich?
Yes.
Senator Chance?
Yes.
Senator Coletta?
Yes.
Senator Croft?
Yes.
Senator Ferguson?
Yes.
Senator Holman?
Yes.
Senator Huber?
No.
Senator Curtula?
Yes.
Senator Meehan?
Yes.
Senator Miller? Senator Orsini?
Yes.
Senator Poland?
Yes.
Senator Rader?
Yes.
Senator Ray?
Yes.
Senator Rohde?
No.
Senator Sackett?
Yes.
Senator Tillian?
Yes.
Senator Willis?
Yes.
Senator Ziegler?
Yes.
38 yeas, 2 nays. 55 yeas, 5 nays.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that Alvin Elkins be confirmed to the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board.
Mr. Dillon moves and ask unanimous consent that Alvin Elkins be confirmed as a member of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. Is there objection? Without objection. Is there objection? Without objection. Mr. Dillon.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that Roger Lang be confirmed appointment to the Alaska State Housing Authority Board.
Mr. Dillon moves and ask unanimous consent that Roger Lang be confirmed as a member of the Alaska State Housing Authority Board. Is there objection? Without objection. Roger Lang.
Mr. President, I would move that Paul Buford, Walter Wood, Lloyd Hollins be confirmed as members of the State Assessment Review Board.
Mr. Dillon moves and ask unanimous consent that Paul Buford, Walter Wood, Lloyd Hollins be confirmed as members of the State Assessment Review Board. Is there objection? Without objection.
Mr. President, I would move and ask unanimous consent that Lee Salisbury, Sue Taylor, Eric Eckholm, Anita McGrath, and Elaine Mitchell be confirmed as members of the Alaska Education Broadcasting Commission.
Mr. President, I would move and ask unanimous consent that Lee Salisbury, Sue Taylor, Eric Eckholm,
asking us to send to John Garner to confirm member of the Mercury Fisher Center.
I thank you, Mr. President. I only objected so as to make a brief statement. I come from an area, a region, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Coastal Village area, which covers some 56,000 square miles. But at this time, the regional residents have been feeling that they are being left out in this area of concern. In other words, Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Alaska State Legislature, the people on the Yukon and the Kuskokwim are wanting to have a representative both on the Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game. Thank you. I remove my objection.
Yeah, Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, members. I'm going to object for the simple reason that I asked, I petitioned the commissioner and asked for a hearing on the gillnet fisheries up at Sand Point from McGinty's Point to Kuperanoff Point. And all I asked was for a hearing in the April meeting, and everybody denied it except Herman Shorter for Dellingham and wasn't saying that we were going to get anything, but they denied a hearing, so I'm going to only approve Herman Schroeder and reject everyone else. And I asked the rest of the board if they would come up to Sand Point or King Cove or Unalaska somewhere and hold a hearing up there to find out what the fishermen wanted. And they said that the rest of the board said they wouldn't come up there and waste their time up around Sand Point, King Cove, or Unalaska. And on those statements, that's the reason I'm going to reject. And we've been trying to get a guy on the Board of Fish and Game up in that district. And it's one of the richest fisheries in the state of Alaska on salmon, crab, shrimp, halibut. And we don't have anybody on the board. And that's the other reason I'm going to reject. And I thank you.
Thank you.
Joint session will come to order. Senator Cotulla.
Mr. President, I withdraw my motion. Mr. President, we'll try this on the side. Currently, Herman Schroeder, there is no debate, there are no negatives on the side. So I would move and ask unanimous consent that Herman Schroeder be appointed or be confirmed to the Board of Fisheries.
Senator Cotulla moves and asks unanimous consent that Herman Schroeder be confirmed as a member of the Board of Fisheries. Is there objection? Without objection, Herman Schroeder is confirmed. Senator Cotulla.
The President will ask for a voice vote on the following, and we'll move together for the speech. Mr. President, I would move that Danny Corral, Samuel Denianthal, Vic Savo, Jim Beaton, and Gordon Jensen be confirmed to the Board of Fisheries.
Senator Cotulla moves that the remaining, moves and asks unanimous consent that the remaining appointees to the Board of Fisheries be confirmed. Is there an objection?
Objection.
There is an objection. There's no objection to the procedure. We'll have a voice vote, both the House and the Senate voting together on the motion. Senator Ryder.
Mr. President, would you make a ruling as to how many hands it would require for a roll call?
The 12.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Huber.
Mr. President, I will take the top of the 11th of my voice vote.
All right, the question will be, shall Nick Szabo be confirmed as a member of the Board of Fisheries? Is there discussion?
Question.
Are you ready to vote? Question is, shall Nick Szabo be confirmed? If many as favor, say aye.
Aye.
If many as opposed, no.
No.
The ayes have it, Nick Szabo has been confirmed. Any other division of the question requested? The vote will be whether Danny Garotti, Samuel Domenia, Jim Beaton and Gordon Jensen shall be confirmed as a member of the Board of Fisheries. Is there further discussion? If you're ready to vote, the question is, shall the remaining members of the Board of Fisheries be confirmed? As many as favor, say aye.
Aye.
As opposed, no.
No.
The ayes have it. Remaining members of the Board of Fisheries have been confirmed. Senator Cotulla.
Board of King. Mr. President, I move unanimous consent to Mr. Urban, Pete Nelson, Samuel Harville, James Reardon, Daryl Harmon, Cindy Huntington, Tim Buckmaster, Thomas Beecham, confirmed members of Board Gaines.
Yes. Senator Cotulla withdraws his motion. Senator Cotulla.
Mr. President, I think there's scattered objections. Mr. President, I'm going to move that Urban Nelson be confirmed member of the Board of Gaines.
Senator Cotulla moves and asks unanimous consent that Urban Peter Nelson be confirmed as a member of the Board of Game. Is there objection? Without objection, Urban Nelson is confirmed. Senator Cotulla? Senator Cotulla moves and asks unanimous consent that Samuel Harbo be confirmed as a member of the Board of Game. Is there objection?
Without objection. Object. Just for purpose of,
where's
Samuel Harbo from?
Mr. President, Samuel Harbo is from Fairbanks.
Representative Eliason. Draws his objection. Is there further objection? Without objection, then Samuel Harbo is confirmed as a member of the Board of Games. Senator Cotulla.
President,
Mr. Cotulla moves and asks unanimous consent that James Reardon be confirmed as a member of the Board of Games. Is there objection? Without objection, James Reardon is confirmed. Senator Cotulla. Cotulla moves and asks unanimous consent that Daryl Farman be confirmed as a member of the Board of Games. Is there objection? Without objection, Daryl Farman is confirmed. Cotulla?
President, I move
that
unanimous consent that Sidney Huntington be confirmed as a member of the Board of Games.
Senator Cotulla moves and asks unanimous consent that Sidney Huntington be confirmed as a member of the Board of Games. Is there objection? Without objection, Sidney Huntington is confirmed. Senator Cotulla? Moves and asks unanimous consent that Clint Buckmaster be confirmed as a member of the Board of Game. Is there objection? Without objection, Clint Buckmaster is confirmed. Senator Cotulla?
Mr. President, I move that Thomas A. E. Beecham be confirmed as a member of the Board of Game.
Senator Cotulla moves that Thomas E. Beecham be confirmed as a member of the Board of Game. Representative Watson. There are sufficient hands. There will be a roll call vote. Would you desire the floor, Representative Blunt?
I did. I object to Mr. Meacham as a member of the Board of Games. They represent an area that's probably 135,000 square miles and encompass some 86 million acres of land. And it's an area scattered all over the interior of Alaska, and the many fishing game advisory boards that I have throughout my district have protested the appointment of Mr. Meacham. From the Fish and Game Board in Fairbanks, opposing the appointment of Mr. Meacham. I think that this is important that we listen to people who are deeply concerned with their livelihood, and I don't think that Mr. Meacham is a good member of this board. There has been a multitude of trouble with the man on the board itself, and I would recommend that he not be appointed. Questions?
Representative Smith.
Mr. President, I've known Mr. Meacham for some years. I first became acquainted with him while I was serving as Director of the Division of Parks, and we had a number of discussions that I think you could describe as frank and wide-ranging. I believe that's the language of diplomacy that means that you disagree, and we certainly did not agree all the time. But I came to respect his independence of judgment and his ability to present those views. I think that one of the major problems that Mr. Meacham has come across in this confirmation process is the fact that he is an exponent of non-consumptive use of the game resource. Now, I firmly believe that that's a valid alternative use, that you can get use from game by other than shooting it. And I think Mr. Meacham, although a number of people don't agree with that, I think that this is a point of view that deserves representation on the board. And I feel firmly that Mr. Meacham will be a good, articulate representative of that point of view, and I urge his confirmation.
Senator Huber.
Mr. President, I want to speak against the confirmation for practically the same reasons that Ted Smith speaks for it, and add just one thing in addition. He's unacceptable to the majority of the constituents in the North Scarborough area.
Senator Poland.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to associate myself with the remarks that Representative Smith made. I think there's very definitely a valid reason for having Mr. Meacham's viewpoint on the board. By having him on the board, that doesn't mean for one instant, and we all know it, that the board is going to turn around and adopt a totally non-consumptive stance policy. It just means that a non-consumptive use, when appropriate, will be presented to the board, and of course, how many other board members do we have there? If he's wrong, he's going to be way outvoted. But it's a viewpoint that a significant number of Alaskans hold, Mr. Speaker, Mr. President. A significant number of Alaskans hold approximately the same viewpoint, I'm sure, that Mr. Meacham does. Perhaps in about the same percentage, I don't know, of his membership to the board. But in any case, having him on that board isn't going to mean an end to shooting or hunting in Alaska. If it did, I wouldn't vote for it myself. I'm probably non-consumptive only to the extent that I'm a poor shot. I try to get game. And Mr. President, I think it's nothing more than appropriate that that viewpoint be represented. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to speak to the non-consumptive use aspect of the previous speeches. Mr. President, over the past 2 weeks, before the river ice got dangerous, men and women, mostly elderly, supposedly, went out jigging, that's fishing through the ice, which is traditionally practiced in my home country. I received a telephone call which went as follows.
State your point of work.
Thank you, Mr. President. We're addressing confirmation. I see no relevance in the argument.
It will allow a wide light up due to debate. Are there any guy who makes opinion?
Thank you, Mr. President, which stated to the effect that there were some protection officers going around harassing some of our people, requesting that they buy sports fishing licenses, which reportedly cost $5 apiece. And Mr. President, jigging or fishing through the ice is not considered a sports fishing in our country, where I come from. Whatever fish is caught is consumptive. It's consumed by the people that get it. Many times, whoever is jigging has families. And just last week, I received another call whereby, again, the protection officers had sighted a hunter for shooting a waterfowl. What species it was, I do not know. But reportedly, that hunter is almost 100% subsistence fisherman and hunter, and reportedly supports 9 children. It is for these reasons that I feel that whomever gets on the board of game should have a heart which can respond to a particular, he means, particular situation whereby a way of life of a people can continue on without gradual assassination of that particular culture. Thank you.
Attorney Brown.
Mr. President, I'm going to reluctantly vote against Thomas C. Meacham. I would concur, I suppose, with Mr. Smith and the Majority Leader of the House that that view could help being voiced on the Board of Game. However, if that is the view expressed by the gentleman, then those who support that view, at least in my area, have not done a great amount of attempting to obtain my vote in this regard. I've heard many correspondence, pieces of correspondence against his appointment. And I have a concern in this manner. We worked very hard last year to divide the Board of Fish and Game into two boards, and it was even an issue I campaigned on in a way. And the concern that I had was that the people who do deal with the game should be people who are from this, I guess the first priority, from the sports and from the subsistence users, rather than having to overlap with all those people who are also more interested because of their professional background or whatever in commercial fisheries. And we accomplished that. And we're now just in the first step of building that new Board of Game. And I think that we ought to accomplish what at least I thought was the legislative intent of that legislation, and to put in people who do have the viewpoint directly relating to the use of the game, a viewpoint that has not really been registered in the old Board of Fish and Game, in my view. And if it's time for, if we had a really attractive candidate who had this non-consumptive use, that I, and I heard a lot of support for him, I might vote for him, but not under the present circumstances.
Mr. President, I'm somewhat surprised at some of the remarks I've heard here. I thought everybody in this body knew and understood and appreciated the value of a minority viewpoint. I know certainly in our daily work we do, and although I'm a sportsman, I intend to vote for Mr. Meacham. because I don't object to a minority viewpoint.
Senator Huber.
Mr. President, I'd like to have one more word. I, too, appreciate minority viewpoints, but I don't think we need even one fox in the hen house.
Further discussion. Representative Hershberger.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think we tend to forget for a moment that the game resources of the state of Alaska belong to all of us who live here. Certainly that segment of the public, the non-consumptive segment, is represented in that ownership. And certainly they should have their voice. And I'd ask this body to keep that in mind on their vote.
Further discussion? Representative Swanson has the floor.
Just clarify something right here for this body. If we're talking about this man being non-consumptive, why did that man, after all the work that this legislature has gone through for all the years that I've been around here to stop shooting cow moose, why does this man, this non-consumptive member that we've talked about here, why did he advocate shooting cow moose?
Further discussion. You ready to a roll call has been requested. The question is, shall Thomas D. Meacham be confirmed as a member of the Board of Game? Secretary will call the roll of the Senate.
Yes.
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 No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Any senator desire to change his vote? Members of the secretary will announce the result. Members of the House may proceed to vote. Is every representative voted? Secretary will lock the roll. Does any representative desire to change his vote? Secretary will take the roll. Thomas E. Meacham has been confirmed as a member of the Board of Game. Senator Curtula.
Mr. President, I'm asking unanimous consent that Mark Engel and Frank Chabados be confirmed as members of the Guide, License, and Control Board.
Senator Curtula moves and asks unanimous consent that Mark Engel and Frank Chabados be confirmed as members of the Guide, Licensing, and Control Board. Without objection, members of the Guide, Licensing, and Control Board are confirmed. Senator Curtula.
Mr. President, I'm asking unanimous consent that William Doolittle, Peggy Richcreek, Nadine Zanger, Mabel Johnson, William Darby, Bob Cronella, Paul Fuchs, Dahlia Wagle-Yee be confirmed the Comprehensive Health Advisory Council.
Senator Tula moves and asks unanimous consent that William Doolittle, Peggy Richcreek, Jordine Zinger, Mabel Johnson, Lily McGarvey, Bob Cronella, Paul Foos, and Della Wadkeye be confirmed as members of the Comprehensive Health Advisory Council. Is there objection? Without objection. Members of the Comprehensive Health Advisory Council are confirmed.
Mr. President, may we stand at ease?
Since the joint session. Joint session will come to order. Senator Curtula.
Mr. President, this may not be terribly efficient, but I think we better be entirely legal. I'll continue on, Mr. President. I would move, as unanimous consent, Karen Workman, Dr. Walter Soboloff, Edward Crittenden, Ellen Lang, and Renee be confirmed members of the Historic Site Advisory Committee.
Senator Curtula moves and asks unanimous consent that Karen Workman, Dr. Walter Soboloff, Edwin Crittenden, Ellen Lang, and Renee Blahuta be confirmed as members of the Historic Site Advisory Commission. Is there objection? Without objection, members of the Historic Site Advisory Committee are confirmed. Senator Curtula.
President, will ask unanimous consent that William Ratcliffe, Diane Stokes be confirmed as the Human Rights Commission.
Mayor Cotillo moves and asks unanimous consent that Willie Ratcliffe and Diana Snowden be confirmed as members of the Human Rights Commission. Is there objection? Without objection, members of the Human Rights Commission are confirmed. Senator Cotillo?
President, I move and ask unanimous consent that Emil Martin, John Tucker, Howard Lee, confirmed to the Alaska Team Crab Marketing and Quality Control Board.
Cotillo moves and asks unanimous consent that Emil Norton, Don Tucker, and Howard Lee be confirmed as members of the Alaska King Crab Marketing and Quality Control Board. Is there objection? Without objection, members of the Alaska King Crab Marketing and Quality Control Board are confirmed. Senator Cotillo?
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that Joe Anderson, James Dawson be confirmed to the Local Boundary Commission.
Senator Cotillo moves and asks unanimous consent that Joe Anderson and James Dawson be confirmed as members of the Local Boundary Commission. Is there objection? Without objection, members of the Local Boundary Commission are confirmed. Senator Cotillo?
Mr. President, I will ask unanimous consent that Jack Maroney and Marvin Taylor be confirmed to the Board of Marine Pilots.
Senator Cotillo moves and asks unanimous consent that Jack Maroney and Marvin Taylor be confirmed as members of the Board of Marine Pilots. Is there objection? Without objection, they're confirmed.
Mr. President, I will ask unanimous consent that Thomas Stengel be confirmed to the State Banking Board.
Cotillo moves and asks unanimous consent that Thomas Stengel be confirmed as a member of the State Medical Board. Is there objection? Without objection, Thomas Stengel is confirmed. Senator Cotillo?
Mr. President, Municipal Bond Bank Board, the name of H.B. Spoodle has been withdrawn, so Mr. President, I would move that Norm Levesque or Norm Levesque and Lance Anderson be confirmed as members of the Municipal Bond Bank Board.
Senator Cotillo moves and asks unanimous consent that Norm Levesque and Lance Anderson be confirmed as members of the Municipal Bond Bank Board. Is there objection? Without objection, members of the Municipal Bond Bank Board are confirmed. Senator Cotillo?
President, I move and ask unanimous consent that Dave Brown confirm as a member of the Occupational Safety and Health Committee Board.
Senator Cotillo moves and asks unanimous consent that Leo Brown be confirmed as a member of the Occupational Safety and Health Review Board. Is there objection? Without objection, Leo Brown is confirmed. Senator Cotillo? Senator Cotillo moves and asks unanimous consent that Chuck Powell be confirmed as a member of the Pacific Marine Fisheries Commission. Is there objection? Without objection, Chuck Powell is confirmed. Senator Cotillo?
President, I move and ask unanimous consent that Beverly Donovan Conrad Miller be confirmed to the State Board of Parole.
Senator Cotillo moves and asks unanimous consent that Beverly Dunham and Conrad Miller be confirmed as members of the Board, the State Board of Parole. Is there objection? Without objection, members of the State Board of Parole are confirmed. Senator Cotillo?
President, I move and ask unanimous consent that James McCorkle be confirmed to the Board of Pharmacy.
Senator Cotillo moves and asks unanimous consent that James McCorkle be confirmed as a member of the Board of Pharmacy. Is there objection? Without objection, James McCorkle is confirmed. Senator Cotillo?
I move Russell Mulder be confirmed as a member of the Alaska Pipeline Commission.
Senator Cotillo moves that Russ Mulder be confirmed as a member of the Alaska Pipeline Commission. Is there discussion? You ready? Senator Rader?
President, my objection to Mr. Mulder arises not out of the fact that I doubt his competency. I think he's a competent attorney. It arises out of the fact that I disagree with the policy that commission has enunciated publicly and in the hearings on the confirmation of Mr. Mulder. That policy to which I object, Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, is that which requires that they act passively, that they act as a court to process complaints that come before them primarily. Their view of their function is that they are there to receive complaints on tariffs, on pipelines, on whatever, and to resolve those disputes. They also, they have acted affirmatively in getting into setting the rate on the Nikiskie pipeline, as I understand. They've been in existence now since, 1974, I believe the special session 1974 or whatever it was, and they really haven't done anything. What they should be doing, in my view, and I think it was the view of the legislature when we passed that, when we created that commission, was to create a commission to pursue the interest of the state and the interest of the public insofar as it relates to oil and gas pipelines. Now, the most obvious thing that they should have been doing was pursuing the Trans-Alaska pipeline routing that's been under discussion for the last 12 months or so. That is clearly stayed within their statutory mandate that on their own motion develop a pipeline system to the benefit of Alaska. They should have had input as to the location of that pipeline. They should have had budget and allocated their budget amounts to gathering information on determining where there should be a petrochemical complex, if any. What would happen if the pipeline skirted the Arctic Ocean instead of coming through the southern parts of Alaska? To this day, they've taken no position. They are the ones who statutorily should be appearing in front of the Federal Power Commission at this time on behalf of the state. They've not done that. If it were a mere oversight, I could say we've all been guilty of oversights at times, but I think that this is a conscious policy that they have, that they will not pursue that type of matter. Obviously, Mr. President, I remember the debate so well on the Trans-Alaska oil line. Those portions of the oil which will be transported within the state of Alaska and which will not be shipped out will be subject to state tariff and will be subject to the tariffs of the Alaska Pipeline Commission. At least that is the best estimate at this time, that they do have jurisdiction over at least intrastate oil, if not interstate oil. That pipeline is coming on stream here next summer, a year from this summer, hopefully. Inherent in the creation of that tariff, there has to be a determination of what amounts are going to be permitted in the rate base. To determine what's to be permitted in the rate base, a commission protecting the public should be auditing those items that are those expenditures that are made by the utility in question. In this instance, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Their auditing of those expenditures is practically non-existent. Their ability to audit is practically non-existent. Their plan to audit is the same as non-existent. Their desire to set a rate at some time is probably real, but they're not equipping themselves to do that. And once the pipeline is built, and once the expenses are incurred, and once the waste of mismanagement, if there is, and I'm not saying that there is or isn't, I don't know, but it's up to that commission to determine that. And I do not think that they are aggressively pursuing that statutory admonition. Mr. Mulder, I again say, and it's nothing personal, is a competent attorney. I view as dangerous, though, the fact that this commission thinks that it acts passively instead of aggressively in these matters of great importance to us.
Mr. President.
Representative Brown.
Mr. President, I strongly wish to associate myself with remarks from the Senator from Anchorage. This appointee and one other member of the Alaska Pipeline Commission came before the Judiciary Committee in a bill that related to their jurisdiction. And on the one hand, they wanted to retain certain jurisdiction, and on the other hand, it appeared that they did not have all that many ideas even what to do with the jurisdiction they have. When we went into some detail about what they have or have not been doing, I was really shocked. Sit down and read the statute relating to what the Alaska Pipeline Commission is, and you say, hey, that's a great idea. And then you listen to the proceedings that I heard in that hearing, and you're very, very disappointed. I don't think that it's a problem of the man's personality or honor or competence as an attorney. I'm sure that there's no objection in that regard, but his views of the policy matters and the lack of any kind of an aggressive attitude with regard to the what I had thought was the intention of a previous legislature forces me to vote against his confirmation.
Mr. Chairman. Joint session standard eight. Joint session will come to order. Representative Greening.
Mr. President, I agree with Senator Rader's remarks that we need to get that commission going, but repeatedly referred to the commission and they. There are two other people on that commission that are not before us today, and unfortunately they're not. They should be, because they're the ones responsible for that passive attitude. If the attorney, a member now on there, is competent, we should leave him on there. He came on board in September of 75, and that's pretty late. And nothing had been done to promote regulation or promulgate regulations at that time. He was getting very little support from the executive or from the Attorney General's office. And he finally got some regulations through that were needed to run that commission. And now we're going to remove him. I think the problem is we don't have the right people before us. And I don't think we're accomplishing anything by not confirming him. I urge the body to confirm.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do feel constrained to make at least a couple of points and in reply to the distinguished senator from Anchorage with relation to the appointment. It does appear to me that what's actually occurred is that this legislative creature, this commission, has never been completely staffed. The legislature has been at fault in failing to give direction. In fact, we have gone and we created a gas pipeline impact committee of both the good senator and myself happen to be members, which took on part of the chores that could have well been assigned to that particular commission. The executive, in my view, has not really used the commission. And here we are, we're giving the heat to one of the appointees for all these evils that we could have cured ourselves had we chosen to do so. And I think it's grossly unfair to take this all out on the appointee. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Curtula. Senator Curtula.
Mr. President, it's late, so I'm just going to say I wish to associate myself in power.
Mr. President, it is unfortunate and unfair to this man that we have to make this judgment on the floor today. It's too bad because he is, in fact, a very pleasant person and probably a capable attorney. But this commission is charged with some of the most important duties that we have in this state. And it takes an aggressive person and somebody who knows where he's going to go. And we should have been moving on this a year ago. And nothing has happened. And nothing less than a complete turnover of this commission is going to do the job. If we don't do it now, we might as well write it off, as far as I'm concerned. We might as well cancel the commission.
Further discussion? Senator Rader.
We're not blaming this man for the faults of his predecessors. Because in the testimony, the confirmation hearings, he saw no fault with their position. And he announced that he was of like mind and that it was not the function of that commission to do the very things that I mentioned before and which are laid out in the statute. He has told us that he does not think that it's at a high priority of that commission to get involved in the Trans-Alaska Pipeline routing problems. Now, if we confirm him after he's publicly said that, I guess that will be a legislative stamp of approval on that inaction. He described to us the extent of their action they were going to take in trying to set the rates for the oil line, which was nothing, basically, nothing. And after stating that, and that was his position, after he explained the extent to which they planned to go for it, after we talked to them about the budget that they presented, first of all, they said, we don't have the money to do it. How much would it take? A whole lot. Well, what, did you ever present it to the governor? No. Did you ever ask for it? No. They prepared no aggressive budget. They haven't asked for the staff that it takes to do the work. They cannot do the work themselves by their own statement because they're overburdened now with the Nikiski pipeline problem, apparently. I'm not blaming him for the last two or three years of inaction, which I think is gross. But I'm blaming him, or I'm making him accountable for his public statements in the confirmation hearings, that if he is confirmed, I see no change in the policy or direction of that commission. And we cannot criticize that commission next year if, prior to the confirmation of its members, they've told us what they think about these matters. I never knew Mr. Warner's position was that. I never knew the position of the other person on the commission was as it apparently is. But I do know Mr. Mulder's opinion. And Mr. Mulder is entitled to that opinion. He views this to be a quasi-judicial agency, which is passive and will mainly take complaints from the public. Now, there are such agencies. There are such agencies. In some states, they're oriented completely that way. This agency has a dual function. It has that function, but it also has the other function. And it is the other function that they choose to ignore and have publicly stated that they're not going to do in the future. I cannot approve that policy. And to approve his, confirm his nomination would be to approve it.
Further discussion?
Question.
Mr. President.
Senator Huber, then Representative.
Mr. President, I too wish to associate myself with the remarks of Senator Rader. I might add one more observation, that the Gas Pipeline Impact Committee, the Organization for the Management of Resources, these people, the legislature formed the one committee citizens formed the other one in the vacuum that was left by this organization not doing the job. And now when a new man to be confirmed wants to continue it that way, I think this is sufficient reason to let the governor know that we don't dislike him as a person or as an attorney, but let's get us a strong man to lead that organization that will do what it was set up for. Thank you.
Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the legislature, I know, are aware that the state has a great deal at stake in the Trans-Alaska Pipeline tariff, and the Trans-Alaska Gas Line, and other matters that should be pending before this commission right now. The time that's lost will, I believe, cost the state a great deal of trouble and a great deal of money. I think right now there's nothing less that we can do in the interest of the people of the state than what we can to urge a complete turnaround in the policies of this commission. The commission has probably the broadest enabling law of any such commission in the 50 states, and they're not using it. The legislature anticipated that this authority would be necessary to protect the interests of the people of the state, and it would have to be exercised. That's not being done. And I would associate myself completely with the remarks of Senator Rader on this subject.
Further discussion? Are you ready to vote? The question is, shall Thomas Russell Mulder be confirmed as a member of the Alaska Pipeline Commission? Members of the House may proceed to vote. Has every representative voted?
Secretary will lock the roll.
Any representative desire to change his vote? Secretary will take the roll.
Mr. President, there are 19 yeas and 21 nays.
Secretary, I'll call the roll of the Senate.
Senator Bradley?
Yes.
Senator Butkovich?
Yes.
Senator Chance? Senator Coletta?
Yes.
Senator Croft?
No.
Senator Ferguson? Senator Holman?
No.
Senator Huber?
No.
Senator Curtula?
Yes.
Senator Meehan? Senator Miller, Senator Orsini, Senator Poland, Senator Rader, Senator Ray, Senator Rohde,
no.
Senator Sackett,
yes.
Senator Tillian,
yes.
Senator Willis,
no.
Senator Ziegler.
Yes. Does any senator desire to change his vote? The Secretary will announce the result.
There are 11 yeas, 7 nays, 2 absent.
Secretary will announce the combined result.
38 yeas, 28 nays, 2 absent.
No, that's not correct. Secretary will announce the result.
I'm sorry, I meant 30 yeas, 28 nays, 2 absent.
Russ Mulder has been confirmed as a member of, as a member of the Alaska Pipeline Commission. Representative Malone.
Speaker. Mr. President.
Representative Malone has the floor.
May I have a brief at ease?
Joint session, stand at ease.